So I think in the moment I tore my Achilles, it was, ooh, this might be over. And I think by that night, it was kind of the mindset was changed into like, all right, what do we have to do?
Welcome to the Performance Nutrition Podcast, giving you the latest evidence-based research and cutting-edge insights for elite mental and physical performance. He's connecting you directly with the world's leading experts and coaches. Here's your host, Dr. Bubs.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Performance Nutrition Podcast. I'm Dr. Mark Bubbs, performance nutritionist, and this is season number 8. Today, I'm excited to be joined by fellow Canadian Tyler Ennis, professional basketball player who played in the NBA from 2014 to 2018 with the Phoenix Suns, Milwaukee Bucks, Houston Rockets, and LA Lakers. In 2018, only 4 games into his new season with the Turkish club Fenerbahce, Tyler suffered a serious injury, a broken tibia that threatened his career. After a long recovery and getting back in the game in 2020, Tyler suffered another career-threatening injury, this time an Achilles rupture. Undeterred by the setback and committed to the process, Tyler's fully returned to gameplay and recently won the Cup Championship with Underdog Napoli in Italy to bring his journey full circle. In today's conversation, Tyler will share his journey from recovery to cup championship, the challenges, the setbacks, the mindset to keep going, as well as the wisdom he's gained over the years and what it's like to be back on top of his game. Before we get started, we've got a new members area at Athlete Performance Nutrition. That's right, the Locker Room has launched for 2024. For just $9 a month, you'll get access to all the latest talks in performance nutrition, from our monthly speaker series to past course modules. In the members area at the moment, athletes and vitamin D, health, performance, and testing with Dr. Daniel Owens, curcumin and athletes, inflammation and recovery, the power of breath for recovery, the 3 mindsets of elite performance, the new science of sleep nutrition, the new science of sweat testing. For the price of just 2 cups of coffee a month, you can stay up to date on all the latest in performance nutrition from top experts in the fields working in elite and pro sports. Just head over to drbubs.com/subscribe. That's drbubs.com/subscribe to register and make a bigger impact with your athletes. Awesome. Let's get the ball rolling. My conversation with Tyler Ennis.
Tyler, really appreciate you carving out some time for us today.
Thank you for having me, man. Excited to talk.
Yeah, listen, I got a whole bunch of questions for you going through this and getting ready for the conversation. But first off, you know, big congrats on the win in Italy, winning the Cup trophy. It's obviously massive.
Yeah, I mean, great experience, first and foremost. It's my first year playing in Italy. You know, so it's a very different feel for the Italian Cup. Playing for a city and organization who haven't been to the Cup in 18 years, which they won, I believe. So it's making the Cup was a big deal. You know, team, I think last year they're facing relegation. And, you know, with, you know, new ownership, new staff, new players, everything, they kind of cleaned house and they kind of want to build. So I feel like this was a huge step for the city and each of us. I think it's just hard to win a cup in any country you're playing in, and you know, Italy being historically one of the better countries to play basketball in, I think it was huge, and obviously something that you want to put on your resume, being able to do so. So you know, we celebrated big time because it's been a long time for the city, and
awesome,
you know, we still have a bunch of games to go though.
Congrats. And that's definitely a passionate fan base in Napoli. No,
yeah, huge. So it's been we're still celebrating low-key, so it's been good.
And how's that life been transitioning to life in Italy? Obviously nice climate, good food, you know, how's it been for you?
Yeah, it's been great, man. Like I said, I've only played in Turkey outside of the NBA. You know, so that's kind of all I knew. I kind of got used to it, and you know, this summer we kind of want to, you know, I wanted to change something new. I was in, you know, Turkey for 4 years. So coming to Italy was like a breath of fresh air for me. Naples is an amazing city. And the Italian league is a lot better competitively, basketball wise, than I expected.
Okay.
Which is good. Obviously that's what you're looking for, but you know, it's been nothing but, positive vibes and everything since I've, you know, gotten here. So I think as we continue to win games, you know, I think we could end this season. And I think everybody would be happy looking back at what we achieved.
Amazing. And, you know, obviously winning a cup's a big deal. And, you know, for yourself, winning a championship, I mean, how long has that been now for you as well?
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you, honestly. It had to be high school, you know, honestly, because I'm an NBA, obviously there's one championship. Now there's the in-season tournament. But, you know, when I was there, there's one championship and, you know, essentially the whole season in the playoffs that you have to win again. And then in Turkey, the dynamic is a little bit different, being that, you know, you have two kind of powerhouses, similar to here a little bit. But, you know, going into the cup, I think, you know, there's two teams that kind of win it every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Italy, I think, is a little bit more fun, you know, because it is really a toss up and unpredictable going into tournament, who's going to win it.
Amazing. And, you know, for yourself, obviously, your time in Turkey, you know, a couple of big injuries, you had a long time rehabbing and getting back onto it. Like, you know, that's a long road there, and to come out and win a cup or a championship is pretty impressive. Can you, you know, share with folks, you know, whether it's the initial injury, you know, the broken ankle, the torn Achilles after that? I mean, obviously tough for any athlete, but those are some major injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to touch on the cup, I think right when we won was the first time, I think, in basketball, I kind of looked back like, ooh, you know, like I came a long way to, you know, and for some reason I thought about the injuries in that moment, right when we won, you know, instead of celebrating and, you know, all the things that go with it. And I'd probably say that was the first time I was able to kind of reflect and be like, you know, something to be proud of after the injuries. But in reality, me playing basketball at all, you know, not to exaggerate it, you know, but, you know, a torn Achilles is known as a career ender. And then add in the fact that I, you know, broke my tibia and fibula all within, I think, 2 years or 2 or 3 years. You know, definitely not something you want, you know, to do, but, you know, we were able to fight back. You know, I've had, you know, and not just because I'm talking to you, I've had a bunch of people in my corner that were, you know, whenever I needed them, they were there, yourself included. You know, so I just kind of had to show up and do the work. But, you know, I was very fortunate to have a bunch of people who knew what they were doing and kind of just walked me through the process. And I was able to, you know, take my time and not rush back. And I think it, you know, worked out as good as it can. You know, when those two things are on your resume, two big injuries, you know, I can't really ask for much more, you know, especially with the level I'm able to play at now after those.
Yeah, like I think a lot of athletes listening are practitioners. I mean, those are some major roadblocks and major injuries. And depending on the point in an athlete's career, you know, it's not easy to just decide to lean into it and to just go through the grind, because it is a grind day to day in those rehab process, right? What was it for you that was kind of, you know, keeping the light at the end of the tunnel? Or, you know, was it just keeping your head day to day so you didn't feel too big? Or were you looking down the road at, you know, a moment like that where you might be playing again and winning a cup?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back, I was very naive. You know, I think the people around me knew how serious it was. And I knew it was serious injuries, but I was kind of like it could be worse.
I'll do this.
Yeah, you know, like that's kind of, yeah. So even I remember in the hospital, right when I broke my leg, the GM's like, oh, it's, you know, this is what happened, kind of explaining. I'm like, oh, it could be a lot worse. Like 8 months? Okay. And he kind of gave me a look like, this is serious. So I was pretty naive to the fact that, like, you know, this could be a career altering injury. So I just kind of, you know, talk to my people and, all right, what do we got to do? What do I have to do? And I think the timing of the Achilles right after that just felt like one huge rehab as opposed to two injuries.
Yeah.
You know, because it was so close afterwards, I was still doing the exercises and, you know, the extra things I had to do in the rehab for my leg when the Achilles happened. So it was kind of the same, like, okay, what do we have to add in now? Instead of like, here we go again. So I think in the moment I tore my Achilles, it was, ooh, this might be over. And I think by that night, it was kind of the mindset was changed into like, all right, what do we have to do? Where's the surgery happening? Where am I rehabbing? Who's doing the rehab? What do I, you know, like that type of thing. But yeah, I definitely think if that happened, a little bit older, I think the mindset would have been a little bit more, important. You know, I was young and naive and my body bounced back pretty quickly. So I'm pretty lucky that if that was to happen, it happened when I was, I think, 25 instead of 35, you know what I mean? So
yeah, no, for sure. It's amazing how keeping the mindset on those kind of actionables and things that you can actually do helps to keep that focus there rather than, you know, getting sucked into the bigger picture. And
exactly,
you know, imagine after that Achilles, I mean, it must have been some moments of doubt as you got, as you're going through the process back on that second injury, or once you started seeing progress, you were.
I would say it was definitely tougher. The Achilles was definitely, the rehab process was tougher. Just because it's such small steps, you know, the rehab is, you know, an achievement is, all right, you can take the heel lift out, you know, like just such little things
doesn't
that you
feel
like,
really so, like the same level of
exactly, just to feel like a normal functioning person again without the boot, like, all right, you could stand for 10 minutes and you're, you know, hype about it. I'd say when I got back on court, there was a few things like jumping off it and trusting it was not as important, but I feel like the recovery process was huge for me. Coming into the season late, I think I missed a few games. Well, I did miss a few games after my Achilles. And I went from like basically just practicing into playing 2 or 3 times a week. You know, so realizing like I feel great in practice Monday and Tuesday, the game's Wednesday, and I'm exhausted by the game because my body's just not used to that. So that was a tough part, just kind of like, okay, is it the game or am I not in shape? And I think by the end of that year, I kind of proved to myself like, no, it's just kind of managing, you know, how hard you go and practice the day before a game. And, you know, luckily those days are behind me and I don't have to think about that. But I think I was fortunate. I had a coach at the time who listened to me, and it's like, you know, hey, we're traveling 6 hours to this game. I'm not going to feel great tonight. You know, like, let me get up and down a little bit and take me out. I'll do treatment and be ready for tomorrow. And they were like, all right, whatever you need. And, you know, I think a lot of times in Europe, especially, they kind of don't care. You know, everyone's the same. And yeah, they push you and you got to do what everyone else does. But in that moment, they knew, you know, I had a bunch of things going on that, you know, I could perform, but I have to, you know, get a proper rest and everything in between. Whereas everyone else was just able to go off the plane, 2 hour practice. They didn't care, but I wasn't in that type of shape yet. So I'd probably say that was the only thing, but I think the leg is definitely, now that everything's healed, I would say that's more something I focus on as far as maintenance than the Achilles. Now the Achilles feels normal.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see that idea of just kind of training smarter, if you will, or having to be forced into that with an injury, of just really assessing how you feel. And as you say, great to be able to communicate that with coaching staff and have it be relayed like, okay, this is the smartest decision, and then see that translate to, oh, actually, yeah, okay.
I broke it down to them, like, even, you know, because I wasn't in full shape, but they kind of needed me to play at the moment, which I understood. And once we got the go-ahead, obviously from the surgeon, I was like, even shoot-arounds are a workout for me. It's still hard.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like, technically I'm doing a 2-a-day. On game day, we're doing shoot around, then I'm playing the game, you know, so maybe I sit out shoot around, or maybe I sit out the night before. And, you know, they were very receptive to it. Whereas, you know, I feel like they didn't have to be, you know, obviously I was under contract, but, you know, they knew I was doing it for the better good of myself, which is the better good of the team. And I wasn't being lazy or not wanting to do the work. So, it ended up working out, and I had actually a really good season that year, which I think helped me prove to everybody that I was healthy and getting back to the same level as that, or even better.
Amazing. And, you know, if we pivot here and kind of circle back in time to your high school days, going back, you know, when you were growing up, who were some of the idols, who were some of the players that you were, you know, modeling your game after?
I think obviously Nash. you know, everybody obviously jumps to that, being that I'm a pass first guy. And he's, you know, the best Canadian we've ever had. Jason Kidd was somebody else, which I'm very fortunate. I've gotten to play for Jason Kidd, and obviously with the national team, work with Steve, even outside the national team, get in the gym with him. And, you know, he made himself very available for us early on, which I think he really didn't have to do, which I think helped all of us. So it speaks to how good of a dude he is. And those were mainly the two guys. I liked Mike Bibby as well when I was younger. Great point guards. But my favorite player was T-Mac. Growing up as a Raptor, when he was a Raptor, he was my favorite player. So, obviously, you know, just being a fan of basketball, that was the guy I wanted to be like. And, you know, I ended up being a point guard and probably more like Steve and Jason Kidd, but, you know, I was a T-Mac guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's always amazing to see guys like yourself and pass first guys and how easy you can make the game for other players. I remember a few years back in Canada basketball training camp, I think it might have been the lead up to one of the World Cup in China. And just, you know, watching you throw lobs from half court to guys, you're like, Jesus, hey, making this pretty easy for a lot of these guys to be making an impact on the court here. So that's really impressive to see. And
thank you.
When you were in high school, I'm just curious your thoughts now. Now, this is what, 2012, 2013, social media is kind of just sort of kicking off. Obviously, today it's a whole different beast and animal.
Yep.
You know, when you look at it for younger athletes who would have been in your position 10 years ago plus, you know, how do you see it? Some pros and some cons of all the connectivity and just the amount of criticism and whatever else comes with it?
I would say the pro is definitely outweigh the cons for playing high school today. You know, you have a good game, the world sees it. You know, the right person puts it on social media and everyone knows you had, you know, 50 points or a great game or you won the championship. Whereas when we were playing, you know, you had to either be there or read, you know, read something, an article. So like the way we looked at it was like, we had to play well every game. You know, I remember one story for me was when I didn't make the McDonald's game and being angry, I was like, okay, I need to make a statement. I had 53 points and nobody really knew because
it's wild, isn't it?
If you weren't in the gym or there wasn't an Instagram page or somebody that posts videos, you know, it's all word of mouth and you know, maybe the tournament posted or your school posted, but like, you know, there was a ton of games where I wish, you know, that, you know, I could get footage of just because of the crazy things that would happen or crazy plays. But now I think it really helps with the brand part of the players now where social media and they could show their lifestyle and whether they like clothes or whatever else. So I think
who they are.
Exactly. And in the long run, I think it'll make them a lot more money than we were able to make. Because we have to wait until we left college and turned pro, whereas they can make money, I think, in high school now, if I'm not mistaken. So definitely pros to everything. And then there's the other side of social media where, you know, people talk and you play bad and you got to read that. But you know, if we're talking guys who are making NIL money, they're probably going to be pros at some point. And that's what we deal with on a daily basis. So, you know, but I understand it's different for teenager dealing with that on a daily, you know, they're in class reading hate from people our age. So it's something they'll have to get used to. But I think it's good for the game or good for the players. I don't know about for the game.
And any strategies that you have personally or that you'd recommend for younger athletes around just sort of that dealing with that negative aspect, that criticism aspect, that's easy to kind of get sucked into that and not hear all the positive voices that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes getting used to for anybody. But I've realized how, you know, there could be 20 people that say good game or we're with you or support you. And it's the two people that say crazy stuff that you remember. And it's just kind of like, you know, remembering how I am as a person is like, okay, no matter how passionate I am for a team, I could watch my college play, no matter how mad I am that we lost or disappointed, I would never get online and talk about somebody. Mm-hmm. So just realizing the people that would go out of their way to do that aren't the happiest, you know, for the most part. You know, you don't see anyone successful. You don't see LeBron getting on and bashing Bronny James's teammates. So it's people that I look at them as people that are unhappy, and you know, you could be unhappy by yourself because
brush it aside.
Whether I read it or not, I'm not gonna give you the satisfaction to let you know that you got to me. So but it's tough, it's part of it. It's you know, you have the pros of social media and these are the cons. So don't ruin your reputation or, you know, a contract for 1 second of satisfaction for writing back to somebody. And I've seen that happen to guys where, you know, after a game you're mad and you respond and now you're in trouble with the team and, you know, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Great advice. And,
yep.
You know, if we segue from there to, you know, your college career at Syracuse, what was the biggest step up, biggest change when you go from high school to college ball at that time?
Nothing really sticks out, to be honest. I think because of the way I play, I didn't have to be the strongest guy, which I think is a big jump for high school to college is the physicality and speed. But I played with, you know, and I think this was my mindset. I played with the number one player. I played with Andrew Wiggins for years in high school, and Anthony Bennett, and these are guys who were the back-to-back number one picks.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, if he's a number one pick, amazing player, but I've seen him every day, you can't be better than him. So, like, doesn't matter that I'm 19 and you're 23. I know I could play here. So, obviously, the zone helped. I wasn't, not that the zone was easy. It's just a different animal picking up full court rather than playing the zone. I think the real jump was college to the NBA physically. But high school to college wasn't a big jump for me as far as anything basketball-wise.
You talk about just the physicality of Andrew Wiggins and knowing the reality that you've played with that player. And even, I suppose, even just from a mindset standpoint of just saying, hey, I've come up against the best, so nothing's going to get me off my game.
There's nothing I haven't seen. Yeah, and if there was something, then you'd be the number one pick or you'd be a top 10 pick. And that's how I approached everybody as far, even seniors that were in college and experienced. Nobody scared me going into the game.
Hey, friends. A quick note to let you know, Athlete Performance Nutrition has a brand new short course all about leveling up your mental performance and coaching skills. Learn from the NBA's Dr. Alex Auerbach about the three mindsets of elite performance and how to leverage relationships for high performance. Learn from mental performance coach Bryce Tully about habit formation strategies for success for you and your athletes. And learn from Dr. Mike Clark, mental performance coach at the University of Arizona, about strategies for having hard conversations, which, let's be honest, is the reality when working in elite environments in sport. You can save 30% off the cost of this new short course with the code MINDSET at checkout. Just head over to athleteperformancenutrition.com, click on the courses tab, and use the promo code at checkout. That's athleteperformancenutrition.com, promo code MINDSET, to save 30% off this tremendous new short course. All right, let's get back to the conversation.
And any memories that stick out of Syracuse, you know, moments that, whether it was that boost of confidence, whether it was this, moment that sort of helped to catapult yourself to that next phase of your career?
Yeah, specifically the Maui tournament. It's like a really early on in the college season. I would say I was playing decent before that, but I think just the energy of like, that might be the last time I won a trophy was the Maui tournament. Yeah. But there was something on the line. It wasn't just a normal game. And the start of Syracuse that year, we were playing kind of lower level teams that we were supposed to beat. And then we got there and I had to kind of take it up a notch in order for us to win. And that was my realization, like, okay, yeah, like, this team needs me, but I could do like, whatever my team needs, if I need to score, if I need to distribute, I could do all that. And my confidence was high before, but I think even higher after that tournament. We won and, we went on to be, I think, 25 or 26 and 0 that year. So that really continued to build the hype around me and my confidence as well.
That was an interesting area of confidence, isn't it? Because it's sort of like you have to have confidence to play well, but playing well breeds more confidence. It becomes a sort of cycle, doesn't it? Of like, how did, over your high school, college, is it putting the hours in the gym and the practice that starts to build that confidence and then it gets ignited even more with performances and games? Or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I think mine comes from just the work I put in. And obviously it's different back, in high school where you're kind of testing yourself against everyone you play. Older guys and pros and whatever, and you're in high school kind of seeing where you fit. But I knew I put in the work. I had two older brothers who, I thought were really good and I was able to play with them. And there'd be little things like, okay, when I'm stronger, I'm going to be better than him, or when I'm taller or whatever. And I just, but I do think there is a part of like being, I don't know if there's another word, but like delusional about it is like, you kind of have to, and I've had games like that this year specifically where, and one was in the cup where I couldn't make a layup. I couldn't make anything for 35 minutes. And I just kept telling myself like, okay, well, if I miss six, percentages say the next one's going in. And I end up getting hot at the end of the fourth. and kind of helping us win the game. And in reality, it's a little bit delusional. Like, you know, some days it's just not your day, of course, but for the most part, you have to like really have that confidence to where even the people who are, you know, believing you're like, hey, stop shooting now. And you're like, no, I have to keep going, you know? So, but yeah, I think the confidence for me was being able to test my skills against, you know, the best players in the world from when I was a freshman, or, you know, EYBL circuit or the national team. I got invited to the Mets when I was in high school. And that was a test because they kind of treated me like a little kid, like put me in the last few minutes. And, you know, each moment I would able to kind of do a move on someone, I'm like, oh, that works up here. Like, oh, they're a little bit slower than I thought. And then by the end of that camp, I'm like, okay, I'm like, I could play on the men's team. Like, and, you know, but if a few of those plays go the other way, you have to have the confidence to, you know, still feel that way. And, you know, that's not easy.
Yeah, it's interesting you say delusional, because, you know, often say confidence is either contingent or delusional. And so that contingent being like on the training, on the process and building all that up. But yeah, that idea of delusional being you're going to do great things and, you know, play in the NBA, you have to be a bit delusional, don't you? Because the odds are so against somebody. And so all the high
the odds are definitely not in my favor.
All the high performers are a little bit delusional, which is good to know for the, you know, rest of the folks listening in. You know, and on that note, if you fast forward NBA, is it 2014, Phoenix Suns drafted? You know, yep. What was that day like? How did you feel?
Amazing. I think the good part about my situation was I knew I was getting picked. I had a kind of a Toronto picked 20th, and I knew, you know, if I were to drop that low, they'd pick me, and it's a place I wanted to go, obviously, being that I'm from Toronto. So we just enjoyed it. I had my family there, invited a bunch of people that I felt had a hand in me getting there, high school coaches, teammates, everyone that we could possibly get to New York for the draft. I kind of invited and got tickets for. But yeah, we just enjoyed it. Like, we kind of we knew Andrew was going first, and we were happy because, you know, obviously we're family and we played together for forever. And then from there, we knew the teams. And then when those picks would come up, it'd kind of be like, all right, this might be us. And then when it didn't happen, it's like, it just felt like we were at home. Like, we were joking around. I had my family there, agent. And then before you know it, he was like, do you want to know when you're getting picked? Because I know now. And my dad's like, no, it's just like, make it a surprise. And I'm like, no, I got to know. Like, I don't want to look shocked.
Something's too much surprise.
Yeah, I'm like, it's already nerve wracking, but they kind of helped me forget about it and not overthink it. So when I got picked, it was just kind of that moment where you picture in your head since you were a kid, and it was exactly like that. You know, every moment of it felt like how you dream about. So it was just an amazing night. You know, I wasn't worried about fit or am I going to play, am I not? I just wanted to get picked. And looking back, I wish I would have dropped two more spots to Toronto, but, you know, that's not how things work. So
imagine that's pretty special to have all those people around you that were part of that journey as well. It kind of like must make your mind just zoom back to all those moments and all those years. Yeah. and everything else, right?
Yeah. And I feel like, although it was my day and I was the one that went out there and played, I feel like especially for my older brothers, it felt like our day because they had such a big hand. My dad being my coach, I felt like it was our draft day. Like, we all dreamed about it. And, you know, one of us was able to do it. So I do have a little brother who's, you know, I have two little brothers, one who's 14. So hopefully we're able to kind of, you know, whatever it is, 25 years later, 20 years later, we're able to go back and have that moment again with him. But, you know, we'll see. He has a long way to go.
That's awesome. Stay on the NBA here. You know, as you get up, you mentioned the biggest transition being college to the NBA. Obviously, a lot of things to navigate in the NBA with beyond even the X's and O's. And there's the S&C and all demands on your time. Like, what were some of the biggest things for you?
Well, I'd say on court was the physicality. You know, you're playing, you know, I was 19 when I got drafted, so I couldn't imagine asking a 19-year-old to come and play myself at 29, much less everyone else. And at my position, it's Kyrie Irving and a bunch of these superstars. And then even on my team at the moment, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Eric Bledsoe, Goran Dragic. So it's just such a high level of basketball that, like, you know, if you end up in the right spot, they give you that time to develop. Yep. Which I think I needed. And when you draft a 19-year-old kid, I think you probably should give him that, you know, 2-3 years where it's like, hey, we're going to let you play, but also teach you. I was unfortunate enough to go to a team that had that type of time or decided to have that type of time. Off the court, obviously managing the fact you go from being a kid in college to being a millionaire overnight and dealing with friends, families, learning taxes, learning how to be an adult overnight at a level that nobody in your family ever had to experience.
Must feel like a treadmill that's running at like a huge pace, right? Like you're having to learn at such an accelerated pace all of a sudden.
Yeah, like I got to the States. I didn't even have a social, but you know, I couldn't even get a phone. Like I couldn't even walk into T-Mobile and get a phone, but you're asking me to pay taxes in every state.
Couldn't even have a beer, could you?
Yeah, it's like, so obviously you have people around you, but you have to learn it yourself, which I think I commend my parents for kind of like, okay, we'll help you, but you have to learn this too. We're not going to do this for life as far as finding a tax guy, firing a tax guy, making those calls, being an adult, deciding to buy a house instead of rent. These decisions that like most of the people with the team kind of, what's the easiest thing to do is put the 19-year-old to the rental. If he messes it up, he pays the deposit and leaves. But my dad's like, no, we'll buy it. I'll do the work for you. I'll give you a move-in date just like you're renting. And then we're able to sell it and make the money back and live there for free. And just little things that like navigating by myself, I would never think of.
It's the business mind going.
Exactly. Yeah. So now I think I'm a little bit more experienced in everything business-wise and life-wise as well.
And looking back on that time in the NBA, you know, if you're chatting with a young player who's coming into the league, what are some of the, you know, the learnings, the lessons, the little pieces of wisdom that you might give?
be patient, but not too patient. I think I was not patient enough. You know, I was kind of antsy to get out of Phoenix. I didn't think I was going to play. But once you leave the team that drafted you or the first team that gave you a chance, you're just a normal player. Whereas, you know, they used the first round pick on me. If I don't turn out to be anything good, it looks like they didn't do their job well. They didn't do their research and whatever. So they'd give you every chance.
More invested than what
you're saying. It's a first round pick is super valuable in the NBA. I didn't understand that back then, you know. At that moment, I just wanted to play. And then just put in the work. I think you're starting out ground zero, and there's guys who've been playing for 15, 16 years in the NBA. They have reputation. So you know, kind of have to look at it like, I got to catch up to the amount of work they put in. You know what I mean? So, you know, some guys get things handed to them and they make it, you know, take advantage, and some guys have to wait for it. But I think if you're just working on your game and developing and getting better, you know, that's essentially, outside of performing, that's the most you can do, you know, at that level. You know, you kind of got to wait your turn in some instances, like I did. But even with everything that happened in my NBA career, those 4 years, the one thing I could hang my hat on is that I worked hard. You know, I don't think I could have worked harder. And I could live with that. You know, the situations didn't pan out, but, you know, I did everything in my power to prepare. And, you know, that's all I could kind of, you know, that's all I could ask for.
100%. I mean, it's control the controllables. Obviously, there's so many uncontrollables in pro sport and the NBA. And like you say, situation, playing time, coaches, teammates, you know, you can only control what you can control. So that's, not very easy to do either. Like you say, put day in, day out, put in the effort and be a pro.
Yep.
Listen, if we pivot from there, from sport to life, fatherhood, you've got a couple little ones at home.
Yep.
What was that like for you in terms of life-changing experience when the little ones came into your life?
Yeah. I mean, I think you hear everyone talk about it. Like, oh, the kids changed my life. And, you know, but it's real. Like, it really changes, especially me, my outlook on everything, you know, from my decisions to things I did as a kid. You know, one of the things I look back is, you know, in sports, we joke around a lot and make fun of each other. And, you know, looking, I'm like, dang, yeah. If someone did that to my kids, I'd be pissed or said that. And obviously, most of those guys are my friends now, guys I played with. And we, you know, go through that together. And that's part of it in a sense, but it's like, you know, you just want to protect them. You just want to provide for them, but you also want them to learn on their own. So kind of navigating fatherhood through day by day and kind of figuring out how to parent and, you know, how everything works. So I think even more, I appreciate my parents, you know, because back then I feel like they had everything figured out. In reality, they were just like me, figuring it out as we would go on. So, but, you know, no championship or amount of money or draft is comparable to just being a dad and being at the births and everything like that. So, you know, definitely, you know, definitely crazy experience and something that I love doing, you know, being a father.
Yeah, I imagine it helps to kind of get away from work, from basketball and everything else, just be able to turn that part of your brain off and connect with the kids. Just helps to really completely shift the mindset, right?
Yeah, it's and you hear people talk about it, you know, your kids don't care how you play. You know, I've had the best games come home and my kids are the same, and the worst games, I think this year actually the CEO of the team, my family flew home and he was asking when they were coming back. And he said, you play so much better when they're here. but I think it's just, you know, you come home from practice and if you're alone, you kind of think about the game all day, think about plays and what you could have did better and worse and everything. But when your kids are here, you don't really have that time. You don't have that luxury to lay around and just woe is me about shots you missed. It's like,
yeah,
you know, they want to play, they want to go to the mall, they want to do all these things. So, you know, I think that escape for me really helps day to day.
It's amazing because, yeah, you have sort of the drive home or the trip home. And then after that, it's done.
It's over. Yeah.
There's no more ruminating. You can't think about it anymore, which is a great thing to be able to switch off like that. Now, what about sleep, though? Imagine sleep
is different.
It was impacted. Like you've navigated all that. How's that working out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a napper. Like I like to nap after practice. And when my family's not with me, you know, I usually get however many hours I need or want, I'm able to get. My day is kind of free after practice. But when they're here, you know, I go to practice. When I come home, especially during the holidays when they're not in school, they're kind of waiting for me to start their day. You know, whether it's going to a fair or going to the mall or going for a walk, they're waiting for me to come home. And the second I walk in, it's like, all right, let's go now. So that's a big change as far as you know, whether you get a 2-hour nap or not, you know, that could be a big difference. But my kids are young still, so their bedtime is pretty early. So I think that's the good part about, you know, having them on a schedule where I'm able to, if I need to go to sleep early, I'm able to, because they're already in bed a few hours before we are, me and my wife. But, you know, I definitely see the sleep side as I get older with them wanting to stay up later.
That's hilarious. And I mean, obviously being in Europe as well, you know, with the kids, family's obviously a big deal in places like Italy and Spain and France. I mean, imagine you guys get to, you know, walk around and be around, you know, the city with the family, you know, rather than having to kind of drive everywhere. What's that like living in the city?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, for this year, my family's not with me for the whole season. They kind of just came for the holidays. Mm-hmm. So when they were here, I tried to kind of take them everywhere I could.
Nice.
You know, I have no idea whether my kids will remember these trips because they're young, but I do have a ton of pictures so they could show them.
There you go.
But I just think it's so dope to even be able to tell them the stories when they're a little bit older. Just like, yeah, we were, you know, around, you know, this was Mount Vesuvius and you did this and you went to Turkey and you know, so as I'm able to continue playing over here, hopefully I'm able to give them a bunch of memories or at least pictures when they get older and just see that they've been around the world kind of to everywhere I have.
That's amazing. Yeah, spark that curiosity amongst them as well. Cool, Ty. Well, listen, yeah. What's next for you? I mean, obviously you're in Italy. You guys are in season now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously looking to finish off this season, you know, on a high note. Me and my wife are having a son in April, probably first week of April, but you never know with these things. So, you know, I was a girl dad up until now. We're going to have our first boy. So
number four. Oh,
so we're excited just to add another person to our family, our growing family. And then, in the basketball world, just continue year by year, doing everything I can to stay healthy and keep performing, because you know, that's kind of the only thing that's been able to hold me back is the injury. So I think they really opened my eyes to how to take care of my body and everything like that. So just taking it year by year, hopefully I'm able to continue playing with great teams like I've been lucky enough to do, and you know, kind of see where things go from there.
Amazing, man. Well, listen, hell of a journey. You know, congrats on the cup. Amazing to have another member of the family coming in shortly, and keep an eye on you for the rest of the year, and appreciate you carving out some time.
Definitely. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate you and obviously your hand in my career and how you helped me all the time. So thank you as well.
All good, man. We're always here for you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for listening to the Performance Nutrition Podcast. As always, appreciate you taking the time. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the Performance Nutrition Podcast. It's a big help to the show and keeps us attracting the best of the best in performance nutrition. All right, see you next time.
The Dr. Bubz Performance Podcast endeavors to provide accurate and helpful information to listeners. These podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Dr. Bubz Performance Podcasts.